On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh my God, guys! Oh my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Like, how bad can we possibly fuck this up? And then her going, oh shit.
I'm not sure what the fuck this is. I'm about to find out.
This is Tall Can Audio.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back into the Tall Can Audio podcast. This is episode 731. We are on Twitter and Instagram at Tall Can Audio. Facebook.com/TallCanAudio. Make sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening to this one. And I will tell you people, since you are so horribly irresponsible, you have forced Rob and I back into a remote situation instead of being in studio with your dirty, germy COVID ways. What's going on, man?
Yeah, it was short-lived.
Yeah.
Right?
Fun while it lasted.
Yeah, for sure. We put one solid one in the bag.
Yeah.
Or two.
That's true. Yep.
I think there was a couple.
There was two.
But,
yep.
Yep. Yeah, here we are back in separate locations.
At least for now. And I made the call on this one with numbers climbing again and my dog shit immune system. I just said, let's see where this is going. Are we spiking back up or are we going to level out again or what's happening? So
well and as I'd said to you, we went through a phase where the first week of school leading up to last week's show, mm-hmm. we have a freshly minted grade 7 in the house, and so
it's gonna be a nightmare for a while.
Well, and this is it, right?
That's not so, even got COVID.
Yeah, well, this is, yeah, unrelated entirely.
Right.
But so we'll see how it goes and see how things shake out there.
Yeah.
It's also, and I'm sitting here in late Sunday afternoon and I smell like campfire. You know that all of you, I'm sure, out there are very familiar with that wet firewood burning and it's just smoking everybody out. And
I went through a phase, as you know, any long weekend I could when we still had the big family cottage, I would disappear and whatever for as long as I could up there during the summer. And I had to, like, I wear a hat all the time. And I would have to remind myself, don't wear the hat to the fire.
Yeah.
Because it would be weeks later, even after washing the hat or whatever, you'd be like, I still smell fucking campfire. Which means anyone walking by me smells campfire. Yeah. And
hey, where's your pack of DeMaurier?
Right.
You got a half-burnt jewel in that pack there, buddy, you know?
So
a puff, get on that.
Yeah. So I could wash the smoke out of my hair the next day, but I couldn't get it out of the hat. So, or I had to leave.
Could you, Matt, how long in between haircuts?
Because
I'm sure there'd be layers.
I have had one haircut since February, and that's long for me. Like, I had one in July when they first opened up the, you know, you could expand your bubble a little bit, you could whatever, and had a friend of mine just, I was like, I don't care, just everything off, all off, right. off.
Yes.
And at that point, my curls, like when I would get out of the shower, my curls were down to my shoulders. And that's, it's not a good look for me at all. So, and I'm due again. It's only been 2 months since that one and it's time.
And really, I'm thinking that it's probably comes down to, it's not even penetrating the outer layer of your hair. is really what it is. It's like the rainforest.
It's thick,
floor there.
Man. It's curly.
This is exactly what's down there.
When I did, I wasn't ready to go into like my usual barber shop or whatever and see my boys Johnny and Fabio. If you live in Ottawa, let me know. I'll let you know because you should go see them. They're good people. But I wasn't ready to go back in there. So I had a friend of mine do it. We could be outside. We could whatever. And I like, she was a little nervous. She's like, what if I fuck it up? And I'm like, my options right now are you give it a shot or I shave my head completely bald. So if you mess this up, the second option is still on the table, right? Like, I can still shave off the mistake and go complete. But that's not really what I want to do. But I didn't want to go, you know, yet back to a public barbershop or whatever. But it grows thick on me, as you know, man. And it's time again, for sure.
And you know what? You telling that story is interesting because when I graduated high school, I took a year off. I traveled a bit, moved from Peterborough to London.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first thing I did was arrived in London. I don't know anybody there. I went from my fine late 80s, sort of early 90s hockey hair / mullet.
The sweet salad.
Oh, man. And it was, and so a lot of hair.
Yeah.
Shaved it off. All. Just left a little beaver pelt on the top. Right? Loved it. So there was just hair and the rest was shaved to the wood. Just before I was going to spend a couple months in Europe, I spent the summer roofing, and I went into a new barber, not the same guy.
Right.
And so I just want just on the top. Well, and he's like, oh, I've got a little more off on this side. Oh, I got a little more off on this side. And then next thing you knew, I had the sort of Chuck Liddell before Chuck Liddell.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even. And I'm like, so it was sort of like more on one. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Right.
And so anyways, I said, just leave it.
Yeah.
Just leave it. And then I went home and I had an electric razor and I just took the rest off. And so, yeah, I went to Europe with no hair, shaved my head bald. And for honestly, I don't know how many years I went. Yeah, that's very little hair.
Right. Well, this was sort of the same thing. And she just said, you know, we'll set it at a half inch or whatever and just see what happens, or a quarter inch or whatever the hell it
was. Tennis ball.
And yeah. And I was like, how bad can we possibly fuck this up? There's a guard on it and whatever. And so we got through like 97% of it and everything was fine. And now you're at that part at the back where you're just trying to like square it off, make it look. And I knew we were largely done. And then I felt this large chunk of hair fall down my neck and then her going, oh shit. Like, what happened? She's like, it's fine. But there was a chunk kind of behind my right ear, but high enough up that, you know, like you said, when you wear the hat all the time, like barely noticeable. But those are the risks you run when you see, I was going to say a non-professional, but you saw a professional and it didn't go any better. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, this is the same guy. His name was Walter. And, yeah. And I went in and his place was in the basement. It was like in a basement apartment turned into, and I think it was an S&M studio on the weekends. I have no idea, right? But it was dark, and I get in there and there's this sort of, I don't know, late teens, early 20s guy just sort of hanging out in the corner, and I'm like,
sure.
What's that dude's deal? Like, what's happening there? And anyways, Walter's cutting my hair, and he's like, hey, after we're done this, you want to come with Sergio and I to the beach? And
nope.
I'm like, nope. Come on.
Don't got a good feeling about Sergio.
It's a beautiful day. And I'm like, no, pretty good, man.
I'm going to go
pretty
home and good. Clean up your messes.
Well, and at the same time, he's got he's old fashioned. He's got a straight blade and he's cleaning it on a leather strop, you know, sharpening the blade. And I'm like, oof, now I'm feeling, I got bad feelings. Like this is a Pulp Fiction scene, right? Where I'm going to end up with a, you know, red gag ball in my mouth. I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yikes. There's a visual.
Anyways, live down. Didn't happen.
Yeah.
And we're good to go, man. I'm here and I'm.
What are you drinking to get through this trauma? Clearly.
Sadly, Matt, anybody who's listened to this show knows that there's layers upon layers of trauma that you sort of become like that leather strop. You become sort of immune to it all.
Right.
I was in to see our boy Andy.
Nice. Anita.
So he had some fresh stuff cracking over there.
Okay.
What I am drinking right now falls under the Nita rating of fun. So the green circle.
Yeah.
I'm drinking the Ginger of Sussex.
Oh, I don't think I've had that one.
Yeah. So
as a
non-ginger
person.
It's a ginger spice.
I see why you enjoy it.
Yeah. A ginger spiced beer.
Okay.
Right. Personally, I was more of a posh spice.
Yeah. All right.
Bex and I have that in common.
The only thing you have in common.
Are you sure? But it talks about, and so as opposed to those of you who are drinking a Schweppes or a Canada Dry Ginger Ale, this actually, when you have a pull on it, it's got a nice ginger taste. You know how that, and I hate to describe it as a tinge soapy or whatever, but the real crushed ginger that you would get with your sushi, or it's got a nice sort of on the roof of your mouth, but it's not overpowering.
Right.
And so as opposed to a ginger, like a ginger cookie, it's more like
it's too much.
Yeah, fresh ginger, like you would, you know, like I said, have with a little wasabi on your California roll.
I'm not into that.
So yeah, it's nice and it's clean. I'm liking it.
I am finishing up a little rum and Pepsi. But I have sitting here beside me, which I don't think I've tried before, from the Perth Brewing Company, the Easy Amber, who I think went to my high school, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But,
Well, no, did you go to a Catholic school?
Yeah. So, and it says amber/red is the description, which I don't like because I don't think those are the same thing. But
yeah,
we've talked recently on the show about how many breweries seem to be blending a lot of their American pale ale, India pale ale, just any
Norwegian pale ale,
right? Like anybody knows what the fuck that means.
Or your huru New Zealand pale ale,
hair pale ale. So I'll be cracking into that here alongside my rum and coke as we move through this one. I want to back sell just a little. As I said, this is episode 731. On episode 730, released over the weekend, a rare Saturday edition of the show. If you missed it, you may have. Maybe not always looking for episodes from us over the weekend. Rob and I discussed Yannick Duplessis and the NHL cutbacks that have been kind of going on financially. You can find that one at tallcanaudio.com. Like the rest, that's episode 730. What did I say? 730, episode 729. We had Chris Hoffley, again, from the Ottawa Sports and Entertainment Group, as well as wide receiver in the CFL, Nate Behar. And Chris approached me and asked if I would like to do something like that, just to talk about kind of the ongoing struggles and whatever of racism in sport and how that's being resolved. Nate Behar, of course, has been seen in a few places. You've seen him on CTV, on CBC, wrote the piece To Pimp a Movement. We have shared the link to that at tallcanaudio.com. So that's episode 729. And episode 728, earlier last week, Paul Romanuk was on to talk a little bit about his time in London, calling games for Hockey Night in Canada, some of his, you know, favorite moments as a broadcaster, and his new show talking about the Beatles, which is called The Walrus Was Paul. So you can find all of those at tallcanaudio.com. Looking ahead, on Wednesday morning, Sean McKenzie will be on the show. If you want to find that one, that'll be episode 732. Wherever you're listening now, you'll be able to find that. And I think our friend Michaela Schreider will join us on Friday morning. That'll be 733. So look ahead for those. Look back for the ones I mentioned earlier. And just subscribe, man, because we got good shit coming.
Well, and the Paul Romanuk one was the audio, little sketchy.
Yep.
Right, due to his phone.
Yep.
But good content there, and to me, I think the way you guys rolled around, he touched quite heavily on beer, right? And it's funny because I got to echo his sentiments. Right, when you asked him about his time in London and if did he sample any good beers?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, the United Kingdom is really the place for, you know, especially anybody who goes in for anything from your traditional brown ale through your bitters,
right,
through your porters, through your stouts. Like, they do it up big and they do it up right.
For
and,
sure.
And for those of you who, yeah, the bitters to me was the entry point for me. I was like, bitters, I don't know. Like, you mean like the spirit bitters? Like, who wants that? But it really couldn't be anything farther from it, right?
Yeah, it's not a great descriptor.
It's right. And it's actually the opposite, right? It's such a smooth drink. It was my entry into to porters and stouts after that, right? So, right. Yeah, loved it, and he covered that quite nicely, right? So, yeah, it was good. It was a good listen.
So that's 728. Like I said, Chris Hoffley and Nate Behar 729. Yannick Duplessis and NHL cutbacks is 730. And then, like I said, Sean McKenzie and Michaela Schreider coming this week. So get subscribed. Good stuff to come. What had your attention on Saturday night as we sit here Sunday afternoon? The Stanley Cup Final was going on. The UFC was going on. The Blue Jays were playing again. What's been on your mind?
Well, I went in a different direction.
A social life?
No.
Because I can't weigh in on that.
No. sat down with the great Seven Child and watched Blades of Glory.
Yes. Awesome.
And I forget about what a stupid movie that is.
Of course it is.
with some outright hilarity mixed in. And it's nice too. The things that I laugh at and the thing that the 12-year-old laugh at aren't the same.
It's actually a shame, man. It means you've gotten old.
This is it, right? Yeah. That's what I said. As soon as that part in you dies, you just dry up and blow away in the dust. But yeah, the thing that we both couldn't get enough of was, what do you guys have that nobody else has? Twin dongs? Yes, of course. So anyways, we took in a bit of that.
Yeah.
And then I had been watching the Jays. Watching the great pitching performance get flushed down the bowl,
yeah, right?
which is a shame because they've needed one of those. And
well, on the broadcast, I don't know if you'd tuned in yet. Dan and Buck were talking about this pregame meeting that Charlie Montoyo had called. At that point, the Jays had lost five in a row. And they both said, and Buck was the one who brought it up first, and it was funny, but it was also true. Charlie hadn't called any meetings yet this season, but if you're going to do it, you do it the day that your ace is going to the mound. So that
your stopper.
Right. So, hey, look at that awesome inspirational speech I gave. It may also coincide with the best pitcher you have, your best chance to win. And he was great. Held them to two runs or less again, which he's been doing all season, and then pissed it away late. But
And the stat they dropped was prior to last night, in eight of his previous nine outings, he'd allowed one or zero runs in eight of the nine.
And I don't remember if that came up or not, but I had that a week or two ago that he had passed Clemens and Halliday for the team record in, they were at six and he had gotten to seven, I think, at that point. So
yeah,
he's been, you know, everything that you've asked him to be.
Well, and more, I think we touched on that a week or two ago. He's been more than I expected.
Right. At this point, you've dropped six in a row back to...
In a historic fashion.
Yeah. So you're down to 26 and 26, 500 for the first time since mid-August. And honestly, they're at, I believe, coming into... As we sit here now, when we started the show, the Jays were up 2-1 in the fifth in the Sunday game. I don't know where it's at now. But coming into today... They were a minus 30 in run differential, which was by far the worst amongst any of the 16 playoff teams. Wow. But you could count most of those this week.
Yeah,
they got whacked in New York.
They've had, and I think of, they lost, if you talk about the two games of the Yankees where they lost 16 to whatever it was.
One was 20 and one was like 17 or something, yeah.
Yeah, and then the previous week they'd also... had a 17
and then the 10-7 loss, you're like, oh, at least that was close.
Yeah, well, and they had that 17 spot put on them by the Mets, I believe, the week before.
That's right.
So
yeah.
You're looking at in just, that's 53 runs in two games.
So there's your minus 30.
Wow. Right. And so, but I think there's still three or four games up on the Mariners, right?
Coming into today. Yes. Only if they had won, if they lose and the Mariners win today, it will be two games.
Okay.
With a week and a bit left. So, yeah, it's four now.
So, and what happens here is you're looking at this just, you're now in sort of survival mode.
Yes.
Right? Where you're home and
like
cool.
Like 2 days ago, it's like, it's not even close. Like, you're just going to cruise.
Well, but the reality is, if in, you know, I haven't looked at it within the past week, but a week ago there was only two teams in the NL that were above 500, right? That it was just
that's
atrocious,
close, man.
What was happening out there, right? Yeah. And that's why the Dodgers, you look at them, I think they're 45-2. Exaggerating.
Yeah.
But they are so far out in front because I think there's some terrible competition there.
Well, and that's the problem with the way this is set up right now, is that they're not going to reseed after round one. So in theory, the Padres, who are the second best team in the NL, but are also stuck in the West with the Dodgers, they're going to face in that second round instead of in the NLCS, right? Yeah. So there's been all kinds of talk of whether or not Major League Baseball is going to keep this setup, or at least for one more year, whatever. There's a bunch of money to be made on TV and shit
extra,
with expanded
extra playoff games.
Yeah. But if you're going to do that, you absolutely need to get away from, we've seen it in hockey, we've seen it in a bunch of, you got to make sure that the Dodgers and the Padres are not playing each other in the second round instead of the third as it's currently constructed. Because
yeah,
you're right, the NL sucks. You can't be eliminating one of those teams.
Yeah, and I agree with you, but if you look at, again, we talked about, you know, not making moves or making moves at the playoff, at the trade deadline. Yeah. What do you do? And with this team, so young, I was a huge advocate for just see what happens,
right?
Let everybody muscle up or not, right? Yeah. And use this as an absolute learning, you know, life lesson. If they were a week ago sitting in that five seed spot where you play Oakland maybe in the first round,
yeah.
And then you go, okay, but now they've dropped to the 8 seed fairly securely.
Yep.
And then you go, what? As the 8 seed, you got to play Tampa. And again, yes, Tampa is the 1 seed, but I want to take my chances with Tampa over the Yankees right at this moment.
Well, it's because you've been traumatized over the last week, and you may be again this coming week.
Yeah. Well, and again, we knew in a 60-game schedule that they weren't going to play the Yankees at all until the last sort of one third of the schedule, and the Yankees were scuffling big time. You know, they had no, you know, John Carlos was out,
but they didn't. I didn't expect that.
No,
like, we got whacked, right? Like,
okay, when you talk about
the Yankees shattered records and their Yankee records, Bronx Bomber records in that three game series,
Murderers Row,
right?
Records.
And instead, it's just guys, I guess that's a guy. I have no fucking clue.
LeMahieu.
Right.
Of course. He's right up there.
They're just
with
golfing
Gary
shit out into that fucking right field short porch. But
yeah,
you looked at that and went, the previous record for home runs in a three game series was 16. They didn't scrape by it. They got 19. Like, they smashed the Jays.
So long, loser. Right.
Unbelievable, man, to think in a three-game series you could get whacked like that. And maybe it happens once, but the fact that you got crushed like that three games in a row, and then you go into a doubleheader against Philly, who's, I believe, just outside the playoffs in the NL, they're like, it's
terrible
a mess,
bullpen.
Man. Yeah, a terrible fucking bullpen, but you have a doubleheader with them, which means they don't have to use it because they're seven-inning games.
Yeah.
And then Saturday, you know, you get wiped out again with after a pretty good outing by Ryu. And as we sit here now, it's tight. We'll see how that pans out, or you people will when we're done talking. But, you know, it's a mess, and you got to play those guys again.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
This is an argument against the expanded playoffs. Like, the Jays are mediocre, and the fact that they are securely holding a spot right now, that,
well, and again, you look at, and this is where I was going with my earlier comment, and then I gapped huge and then just started swinging.
Sure.
is with the number of double hitters, like, you look and go, all right, well, we're four games up on those guys. Well, then they have four games in the next 2 days,
right?
And you're like,
oh, we're tied.
Yeah, look at that. Bam. And you sort of go, wow, how did that happen? Mm-hmm. But yeah, and that is, you'd like a chance. You know, when you look at the schedule and you go, yeah, we played the Yankees 10 times in the last 20 games. But look at them now. They're losing games in a spectacular way. You know that's not going to hold forever, right? And they still have, they're able to pull out pitchers.
Well, you mentioned,
Cole is, man, that guy's a killer.
So they were planning to run Cole and Tanaka Monday, Tuesday. Decided to push them back so we get both of them Tuesday, Wednesday. Thanks for that. I wonder what you mentioned Tampa finishing eighth. I think Oakland's only like a game back of Tampa, so things could shift in a hurry. As a Jays guy, I want anyone but Tampa.
Yeah, like, well, because you're going to play games. Yeah. All three will be at the Trop.
That's right. So I'll go. Well, actually, none of them will be at the Trop. It looks like they're going to bubble, right? But
oh, then bring it on, man.
I have very little feel that it's the stadium that's the problem. It's something about the way.
Have you ever tried playing Major League Baseball in your parents' basement?
Just a big fucking rec hall.
Yeah, oh, exactly. In the back end of
it's funny that as Jays fans we get to say that, but
yeah. Yeah, but I like ours way better.
I do too, but yeah.
At least we can take the roof off of ours without the Woolworth coming off or the JCPenney or whatever's above the Trop.
The Rays are playing in a giant empty warehouse somewhere is essentially the deal. But I would rather play the White Sox or the Athletics over the Rays, even in a neutral site deal.
Okay. And I agree. They have had this over the last, I don't know, decade.
Yes.
But if you look at how many games when you watch the evening ticker or whatever, how many games are being decided by 15 or more runs? Like, to me, I'm amazed by the number of, and again, I think that's due to the lack of bullpens, the lack of arms.
Guys aren't jacked up, like, or stretched out.
Yeah, and as you continue to push doubleheaders, and you're like, man, my starter gets three innings and we're getting flamed, and you're now having to bring in your long relievers, and just how
it seems to be more about, at least in Toronto, and there was a time where they were telling you it was intentional, that we're not letting our starters see the lineup for a third time. We're not doing that.
See, way too much of that.
Okay, but the numbers back it way the fuck up. Like, all of the Tanner Roark was the guy who went off saying, this is fucking stupid. I don't want to see that anymore. His ERA.
I didn't want to see that guy for a season either.
But he's the guy whose ERA goes from like 2.12 to 8.6 in the third time through. And you're like, you are not the guy.
You're the poster boy.
Right. Exactly. Well, might be the reason this is happening.
And get it straight, Matt. It's Roark.
It's Roark. It's Roark. It's
you're not. Yeah, it's Roark.
Apparently, so I don't know, man. It looks like Shoemaker's going to be back shortly. It looks like Nate Pearson.
Pearson
is on the mend, but he'll come out of the bullpen from this point on. Forget who you're going to play. If everybody gets healthy that you expect might get healthy, how do you want to line up the rotation? In a best two out of three.
We're starting with the Korean Zombie.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. And after that, if you look at that one, I believe it was the Yankees game where Taijuan Walker he threw very well.
Yeah, he was doing fine.
And then Fisher is just
out there gaff.
Could you not have a fishnet or something out there? Like, what are you doing? Like, awful. Honestly, like me as a 12-year-old fastball, hardball player, I can get those, man. Like, are you kidding me?
And like right after the brutal one, Gardner golfs another one out to
him. And you're like, what are you doing, man?
A frying pan instead of a glove.
Well, and I texted you right away, and I'm like, could you not at least have let that hit your face?
Right, like the first
like,
day on the
like show. In the first time you played for the Jays. So, you know, I'm hoping Sanchez and Biagini, who I believe we traded to. Yes,
that's right.
To Houston. For this guy who was going to be our future center fielder.
That was the bad day, right? It was trade deadline, Biagini and
Sanchez
combined, I believe, for a no-hitter.
They did?
And our guy caught a fly ball with his face.
Future center fielder
way,
right there.
Didn't catch it.
Yeah.
Clanked off his face.
Hey, you know what? If I'm getting struck in the face with a baseball, I'm probably not catching it
either. I'm probably at the plate.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be happening in left field, man.
Yeah, and this is so to me that summed up. Ooh. That summed up, and I believe we touched on it on the show, but that sort of sums up that trade right there in a nutshell.
Yeah,
no hitter, ball in the face, done. And again, not like, hey, he's pitching me high and hard up and in.
Yeah,
no, I'm going for this. I got my glove up. Like I've done since I was 4 years old.
Yeah. You're playing slow pitch.
Oh, man, that's going to leave a mark. Raccoon. So, yeah, doubling back now to your original question.
Yeah.
They're hoping to get Shoemaker in for a couple.
Yeah.
Prior to...
They say they got him stretched back at 50 to 60 pitches.
Yeah, 60 pitches really was the all last
anybody's
one. Well, this is it, right? And you watch guys like the Phillies pitcher Velasquez Saturday night.
Yeah.
And he was at 50 pitches in the second inning.
Yeah, no, they wore him out for like 47 in the first inning. So.
There's just some crazy shit going on. And so
half of those were Biggio. Just take and take and take. Tink, foul off, take.
Yeah, well, how about Bichette? He's hitting balls at his shoelaces and he's hitting balls at his shoulder height. And
right.
fouling off all these balls. And you're like, that looks like Vladimir Guerrero Sr.
Right.
Right, who would hit balls that bounce in the dirt first.
You're like, and then golfing them out.
Yeah, and was sitting like, what?
Yeah.
How does that even happen? So Bo has that. And it was interesting to hear Dan and Buck, I believe, were talking about it. And they were saying that Dante, who, and again, I don't think we've ever talked about this. Does it feel a bit like you're horning in when you've now got on the staff where your son is?
Yeah. Did you bring the orange slices this week?
Well, and I look at him, and for those of you who are older than, I don't know.
Well, just Dante Bichette is Bo Bichette's father, longtime major leaguer, kind of showed up to camp to help. They liked what he was doing, and all right, why don't you stick around and be a hitting coach?
He had a great mullet, too, in playing for the Rockies in sort of that mid to late 90s.
Yep.
But looking at him now, he looks a little bit like in Return of the Jedi when they uncover Darth Vader. That part where that's kind of what Dante Bichette looks like now. He looks like Vader when they pull the mask off.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay, we're not.
I don't do Star Wars.
We're not getting Dante on the show anytime soon.
Seems unlikely.
Sorry about that, Dante. Yeah. Apparently, he's doing good things, right?
By all accounts, yeah. And he's talking to the pitchers as much as the hitters, right? About how to work guys and whatever.
He's the get back coach.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So I'm going with. Obviously, and his name escapes me now.
Byung-Hyun Ryu.
Ryu, yes.
Yeah.
He's my game one starter.
Right.
I'm probably going with Walker, and I'm hoping at this point that Shoemaker can get a couple of decent starts in, and then he's ready for that third start.
If he can't, would you consider Ray? Because he seems to be coming around a little bit. Like he's. He came over here leading the league in walks, and he hasn't got it completely under control, but it's been better. And
still with great strikeout numbers,
yeah,
too, right?
Yeah.
Like he was like walking or striking it.
Right. He was loving the the true results, right? I'm going to strike you out.
Yeah, this is it.
We're
not putting the ball in play, baby. And with the Jays defense
that's
right
fine.
Now,
yeah.
Do it.
Yeah, he would be the other guy, and maybe only for two or three innings, right? Like the... But I don't mind that idea based on what he's shown since he was here. But I'm with you. If you could get Shoemaker to start maybe Tuesday or Wednesday, and then I think the season ends Sunday or Monday, like maybe you could get one more in there. If he looks okay, that'd be where I'd go. But I don't hate the idea of Robbie Ray being your game three.
Yeah,
but with a super short leash.
Agreed. And you know what? I'm pairing him up with Hatch.
Yeah.
Because to me, I can't wait to see in a full 162 game when they bring that guy in, if they bring him into the starting rotation, what he's got, right? I think he's got great stuff. And his future is as a starter.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, well, that's my take. And really, at this point, if they can get, Hernandez is back now, let him get up to speed. Give it a swing, man. And whatever happens, happens in this short season. And I think the pressure that these young guys are feeling will pay huge dividends.
Yeah. Well, and that's it. Like, it's frustrating right now to see them drop six in a row, obviously. But they were also never supposed to be here. No one picked them to be a playoff team. So you want to see it. And you want to see, you're going to cheer hard. And it's frustrating to see these mistakes. But at the same time, A, you weren't supposed to be here. And B, it's an extended playoff, so let's chill out just a little bit, I guess. But it's hard to to be objective once you're in it.
But you cannot manufacture the pressure that comes from a sprint.
Right.
Right. Which is what these guys are in, right? In terms of now, I would love to see them make it into the extended playoffs just to see what happens.
Sure.
But the reality is, if they don't, and they've felt this pressure of looking over your shoulder, of, hey, man, we got two guys on base, like on, you know, that 10-7 game or whatever it was when you're, or the second half of the Phillies doubleheader from Friday night. And
right.
You go, man, we're down by a run. We got guys on first and second, and you got Bichette on base, or Biggio, whoever is at bat, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
That pressure, you cannot duplicate anywhere else.
No.
It's like last year when we talked about it on the show. Harken back, come with me down in this walk down memory lane, ladies and gentlemen, where the Jays, who were, I don't know, 10 games under or 20 games under 500, whatever yes. they were last year, went into Yankee Stadium, and Chapman came in and he faced, you know, Biggio, Bichette, and Guerrero, and all three guys had these outstanding at-bats against one of the best closers in the game.
Yeah.
A guy who's still consistently hitting 100
mm-hmm.
on the right. And so those sorts of opportunities, and the one that's presented right now, it's can't miss for the development, right? You just hope that the mental errors, the defending errors, the base running errors, that these sort of things can get worked out, right? But I'm loving what's happening this season.
Agreed.
And see that right there?
Yeah.
That's the Opa.
Opa. Oh, okay.
And so not like Dutch or German grandpa. It's more of like the Opa.
What is it you're supposed to say when you fucking spill?
No.
Is that not?
When you smash dishes, I think that's it's the Greek live the good life kind of.
Smash dishes.
Yep. And so it's a, they're calling it a strong beer. And again, on the Nita rating, it comes under the, this is a black
not
diamond.
Fun.
Yeah. This is the black diamond for adventure. Ooh. So I'm going to have a pull on this and I'll let you know how it goes.
Okay. I was checking out last night. I think we'll talk a little bit about the Stanley Cup final, but I passed on game one to watch the Blue Jays lose and then tuned into the UFC fight night. It was a free show instead of being on pay-per-view, but with, I would have to say, a pay-per-view quality main event, as Colby Covington took on Tyron Woodley. And a little disappointing, given all the shit talk, to be honest with you. Sometimes you like some fireworks in those sorts of fights, but you're talking about guys who, you know, used to both train with American Top Team, couldn't stand each other then, and things get out of hand in a hurry. You get into this fight, and I know you didn't get a chance to see it, but for those who did, you know, Colby Covington is dominating for the first four rounds. He's clearly won all four of those rounds. And you can see going into the fifth, the Woodley's camp is like, you got to finish this. Like, you got, and he looks, I wouldn't say despondent. Like, he's not giving up, but you can tell something's like, oh, fuck, if I got to finish him here, I don't know. And they maybe get 2 minutes into the fifth round, and Covington's got him down again. And all of a sudden, and it, you really pick it up because of there's, you know, this is at the Apex in Vegas. There's no fans again. Woodley starts screaming out, and so the ref jumps in, stops the fight, and, man, Woodley stayed down a long time. And apparently, like, he's screaming, my rib, before the fight even gets stopped. And I guess it's come out since then that he broke a rib somewhere earlier in the fight and then tried to continue, which would explain some of the sluggishness, I would think. Broken ribs fucking hurt. And when somebody's now leaning on you and twisting you. But, man, that was a fight that had a ton of hype, a ton of hatred going into it. And as often as not, those seem to be the ones that disappoint. Like, the ones that have the real hatred between them where you expect fireworks. It was a good fight. It was interesting to watch. But often as not, man, the ones that are kind of come in and catch you by surprise seem to be the better ones. This one, for all the shit talk going on beforehand, didn't seem to really live up to it. And, you know, it kind of sucks when the villain wins and he's shit talking after the fight, you know, shouting out Donald Trump and fuck woke athletes like LeBron James. And, like, there's some, he's trying hard to be the villain. But, do you, have you ever found the same thing, or, like, your take on sort of the hate fight versus the skill fight?
Well, because there's so much more pressure on the fighters.
Yeah.
Right? And so this is that, it's the equivalent of, you know, I'm going to meet you at the hydro box across the street from school, right? That, especially with, you know, mixed martial artists, there's such
a... They say anger is the worst thing you can have.
I was just going to say, there's such a cerebral component to it, right? That you have to, the best fighters find a way to suppress that enough that there's the skills can overcome the rage, right? And and a lot of times there's a lot of shit that gets talked. Man, I watched an excellent 30 for 30 on Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you've seen that.
I haven't.
But just in terms of the ability to, you know, when these rivalries, as two guys who came out of the same stable sort of together, which is, you know, Covington was brought in years ago to be a sparring partner for Woodley, right? So as you said, they came out of the same team, sparring partners, and legitimate hate. But I think guys of this level, and they are at or near the top of the food chain in that division.
Yeah, both former champs, one a real champ, one an interim. When I say real champ, I don't want to be I'm not trying to be a shithead, but an interim champ like Covington, but there seems to be real shit there, right? Like Jorge Masvidal came to out of the same camp and went to train with Woodley. Like, he's the same way, like, fuck Covington, right? Like, I don't want to hear any more from that guy.
Which everybody deemed to be a shot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that is a and now I always like to see how these go, right? When it comes down to, because you see then after the fight, you know, guys hug it out and you're like, yeah, okay. But yeah, that's legitimate. That's legitimate. And anybody who's had a broken rib or a cracked rib,
yeah,
no faking it.
No.
There's no. There's, you can keep your elbow down or whatever it is, but
he did his best for a while. And once someone's on top of you trying to stretch you, fuck, we're done.
There's absolute, that's one of those moments where you go, I got nothing.
That's, right. That's exactly what happened here. He was screaming.
Basic instinct is, I can't tough through that.
Right.
I can't. It's like anybody who's been punched in the kidney before.
Right.
And I know Matt.
Life punched me in the kidney.
Crazy punch in the kidney.
Yeah. Both.
But man, I've taken a couple of good shots to the kidney.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that go, I am fucking taking a knee.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And you're like, I'd like to keep going, but I really got nothing.
And so you can tell when you're looking at Covington in this one, that's the second time I've done that, that like he's yelling at Woodley to get up because he's trying to play the heel. Afterwards, he's screaming, bring on Masvidal, bring on Usman. And in the, you know, this is before they stick the mic in his face for the post-fight interview, and then he's shouting out Donald Trump and shooting out LeBron, like cussing LeBron James for some fucking... And you can see what he's trying to do. He wants to be the guy. He's a knockoff Chael Sonnen, right? But you look in his eyes and you watch his face, you're like, you're not feeling that. Like, this is a performance because you think this sells fights, but you don't. Like, he's not that guy. But he wants to be, and he wants to get in. And, like, Usman's going to fight Gilbert Burns in December for the title. So that one's gone in terms of being a middleweight or a welterweight showstopper. So he wants Masvidal because there's money there because they're bad blood, but they're trying to make Masvidal versus Nate Diaz happen to bring him back. So that's sort of out the, you know, like you get beat a couple of times like this guy has, and suddenly in what's become a very interesting welterweight division again, you're in the top five, but you're sort of stuck at the back of the line. That might be Edwards. Yeah, you're just, give me something, right?
And I'm jumping and shouting and waving.
Right. Someone pick me, right? And so Daniel Cormier pointed out, and Chael Sonnen, maybe you're the guy for right now, get in the batter's box, which is apparently meaning just wait and see if someone gets hurt before that Gilbert Burns, Kamaru Usman. Deck circle. Right. Right. So someone gets hurt in training camp. Maybe you get to fight Usman in December or Gilbert Burns or whatever.
It's crazy times, right? Nobody has any idea what's going to happen.
No.
You have guys getting out of their camp and then moving about and getting sick.
Yeah. On the flight, I caught the fucking the Rona.
And so, who knew that all this circulated air was just going to make me sick?
Right.
But that to me at this point, you got to put a couple of these together now.
Yep. Right. Well, to me, the welterweight division is as interesting as it's been in 5 or 7 years, right? Like right now, there's some names there that are just killing it. And
And it's a weight category that guys can come down to, guys can move up to, right? It's not like a traditional lightweight at 155 can go to light heavy or middleweight,
right?
Like that, it's just too much.
Yeah.
Whereas that 170 weight is, you get those good middleweights who can cut to that. It's hard, right? And especially these guys who fight, it becomes, you know, the weight cutting game becomes, you know.
Well, they said that about Woodley. Like he used to wrestle at 185, and now as he's getting older and he's struggling a little bit, you can see him in these press conferences and the weigh-ins and stuff, and his voice is kind of gravelly as he's cutting to 170. And so maybe his next move is up to 185, and maybe he can be a little more effective there. The other guy, I know you didn't get a chance to watch, maybe you've seen the highlights, I don't know, on SportsCenter or whatever, was Khamzat Chimaev. And he took out MG3 in a 17-second fight. He is now the first guy, well, he's got the fastest UFC record ever to 3-0. He did it in 66 days. 3-0.
When you're fighting 17 seconds.
Yeah, this didn't take a ton out of me.
He's due up in 3 weeks.
Right. And that's sort of what happened early on. He gets his first fight, then someone backs out of the second fight, and all of a sudden everybody's paying attention because he looks like a killer on the ground, right? And his ground game looks incredible. He's tapping guys out, he's submitting people. And that's what happened in the first two fights. And here he is again in his third fight. And he knocks somebody out in 17 seconds. And you can kind of see early on, this guy knows, Merchard. It's Gerald Merchard is the, who I wasn't super familiar with. But he's got a strategy against Chimaev. Like, he knows what he wants to do, and he's rotating.
You're not taking me down.
Right. And so he kind of backs away. He's rotating. And Chimaev throws one kick at his legs, and it kind of drops you for just a second, like just drops your guard, and he comes over the top with this knockout, and all of a sudden everyone's losing it again, like, holy fuck, he can strike too, right?
He can strike too.
So he's 3-0, and he's exciting. He's doing it fast to everybody. His strikes in those fights combined are 294-17. Like landed significant strikes. So people are excited about this guy, and you're wanting to see almost. He's a welterweight as well. Well, the first two were at welterweight. This one last night was at 185, so he moved up to middleweight. So is the fight now, you know, apparently the next move is to fight Damian Maia, who's been around forever, right?
For sure.
But it's Maya's last fight on his contract. It's clearly his retirement fight, and so there's this talk, like, do you make him get in with this savage and have that be your retirement fight? Is that what he wants to do?
But the thing with Maia is an elite grappler.
He's a ground he's killer,
and he's been around enough, right? He's gone through the Matt Hughes, the GSP.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, he's been through
since like 07, that guy's been
And so to me, the thing is, it's great. It's a great fight because maybe Maia, who I don't believe Maya's ever won the strap.
No.
But he's always been that gatekeeper. Yep,
exactly.
Sort of guy, right? And so this is a great fight because you are not going to surprise Damian Maia with shit. Nothing.
No.
There's nothing you're going to bring in terms of.
So maybe that's the reason, right?
Grappling.
Let's see if this guy's for real. Like,
right. And so to me, this is. Even though Maia is at the end of the road, he's wily. He's wily, right? And as long as he isn't Anderson Silva at the end of his road, right? Some guys just go, whew, I'm done. This getting punched in the face or kicked in the ribs or
this
choked
sucks.
Out. Yeah. This is, you know, that's a young man's game.
Right.
People say that, you know, it's not like baseball where I'm stepping in.
Yeah.
You know, this is, I'm stepping in and I'm going to get punched in the face.
Well, and both in the post-fight kind of show that Ariel Helwani had with Chael Sonnen, you know, they said, like, is it disrespectful to Maya to make him retire that? Like, and I don't know what they're suggesting. Do you throw him a hot dog that maybe he gets to win on or what? To me, this is a great, like, let's see it. Let's see if this kid's for real against somebody else that you know is for real. And
you remember, and I know you do. You know, back a decade ago when you paid for a UFC pay-per-view fight and they had the gladiator getting all strapped up,
yeah.
Right? And the music is going. And the idea that two men come in, the cage closes.
Yep.
And I think Damian Maya is as throwback as you're going to get. And that's a guy who you don't want to cherry pick at the end of your career, right?
I think you're right.
If he gets knocked out, he's a guy who knows, hey, man, you pays your money, you takes your chances. That's how it goes, right? And as a fighter, and Damian Maya is that guy, he's good, man. I don't know him. I haven't spoke to him recently. But I can only imagine that's a guy who's good to go.
I think so, too.
With whatever you bring. And if he gets knocked out, he gets choked out.
Yeah,
he's a guy who's gonna say, yeah, all right, I gave it right to the end. I fought good fights right to the end.
Right, and if you're gonna look around that division, it looks like it's Usman versus Burns. It looks like it's Masvidal versus Diaz, and then probably Leon Edwards versus Colby Covington. So even if you're ready to push Chimaev up into that kind of top five or six, they're all kind of spoken for here for the next bit. So do the Maya fight and see what happens. Someone gets to go out and their career with a sweet victory, or someone gets to make their fucking name, right?
And again, Chimaev, I think, has got to be chomping at the bit. Maybe he wants something better.
Apparently he's used to fighting every 20 days.
Okay, but if you get a Damian Maya, it's a tough one, right? Because that's an older fighter,
yes. Yep.
who's on the south wily. Side of the slope, right? And you go, I'm supposed to, but he also will, you know, from an impartial, unbiased perspective, it's a great fight for Chimaev, yep. too, because it's gonna Maya will, unless Chimaev steps in and destroys him,
yep.
right? It's gonna force him into deeper waters,
yep.
which guys like that can survive,
yep.
right? They've been through, they've seen everything, right? Taking the head kick.
And he's a big talker too, which I love, right? Like, because people said, coming into this, he keeps saying, like, I'm going to smash this guy. And you're like 1-0, like maybe you should just chill out. And so somebody asked him after, like, if you're going to face Maya, are you going to say that you're going to just run over him? And he goes, I respect everybody I fight. But I also believe I will smash everyone I fight.
Yeah, like, okay.
Okay, man, let's go.
And that's alpha athletes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Who is, yeah, I can respect you, but I don't respect you as much as I respect me.
Right.
And so I love the fighting psyche. I love all that goes into that.
Yeah.
Because it really is, at the end of the day, you can talk shit, you can do whatever. And maybe, you know, in other sports, hockey, for instance,
yeah.
right? Or lacrosse. Maybe I don't get the opportunity doesn't come where mm-hmm. I can line you up or
right.
I can get you in my crosshairs, right? Guess what? In fighting, bam, especially.
Well, that was it with Covington last night, right? Like, you're the villain.
We're going to fight.
You want to see that guy get his ass kicked, and he didn't. Like, he backed it up, and he dominated that fight, and he talked yeah. shit at the end because he earned the ability to talk shit. So,
well, and really watching the run ups, you know, and the road twos and, yeah, and all that yeah. sort of stuff. I was okay with Covington smashing Woodley, to be honest with you. It's he'll get his.
Yeah.
But Woodley didn't shy away from the smash.
No, he didn't.
Right. And he talked like he was Muhammad Ali to Larry Holmes, right? Like, he gave a bit of that feel of, okay, bitch, you're going to get yours like you did 7 years
yep.
ago. Well, guess what?
Nope.
Sometimes the young lion comes back and bites you in the ass.
Yeah. And that's the thing with Covington. He's trying to sell fights. He's not quite selling me yet on how much he means it, but he's clearly a talented fighter, and he wants to talk shit. And he got a because he, in the octagon, shouted out Donald Trump in the press conference afterwards. His half his press conference was Donald Trump phoned him on speakerphone. It's like, we're both winners, right? Like, oh, fuck. So
make America great.
Yes.
Kobe.
Exactly. I think the last thing we were going to touch on then was the first game of the Stanley Cup final. The Stars come out and punch the Lightning in the mouth, take a 1-0 series lead. I don't know how much of it you got to take in. Honestly, I saw nothing. Saw some highlights and read a few things afterwards, but I don't think it was particularly shocking based on what we've seen in these bubble games in terms of rest versus rust, right? Like we've seen a lot of teams who've been sitting around get the chance to come out and take an early lead. I don't know what I guess we didn't do the pre-series prediction, but what you thought was going to happen, and were you taken aback by what happened in the first game?
I shot it out on Twitter and got zero love. Oh. Zero love.
Oh.
I'm not sure what's happening here.
Okay.
I'm actually totally sure what's happening.
There's
here.
No love on Twitter.
My 24 followers didn't pick it up. And if you
at
don't,
Captain Blowhard, people, come on.
But that's what I said, right? I said, are you going to see? You know, is Dallas going to be able to jump on Tampa, who is kind of limping into the Cup final?
Yeah.
Right, or is Tampa going to be able to roll in with a little bit of mo, right? And see what happens. You know, is Dallas going to be able to continue to play? And I like the reference. I think it was Kevin Bieksa on Hockey Night saying Dallas plays from the inside out, like St. Louis did last year, right? Forcing everything out, not letting you get inside. And the flip side is, was Tampa going to have a better opportunity than Vegas did to sort of make that big 3D in Dallas turn,
right,
and defend, right? So to me, I was sort of leaning towards Dallas and six in this.
Really?
Oh, wow. Wait, only due to I am very unsure of the health, right? Where Braden Point is, I think these two teams healthy. I think Tampa's steamrolling Dallas. I think the fact that we're not sure what's happening with Braden Point.
Stamkos might still be an option. Nothing since February.
But you see him out there. He's skating around at practice.
You see him come out after they won the Eastern Conference title, and he's got his jersey on.
I did not see that. Because honestly, as soon as it was like, over, I was like, click.
Stamkos putting his name on the group project after doing none of the work.
And for sure, where have you been?
Right.
So I was not surprised, but I wouldn't have been surprised either way, to be honest with you.
Right.
If you look at the 22-2 shots in the third period,
mm-hmm,
right, just how now, to me, that's as you've talked about in the past, Tampa's pressing.
Yep, score effects.
Tampa's pressing, but there wasn't a pile of Hudobin did not look like he was being sweated at all, which,
right,
is good because he's got that David Wells. If you pinch his cheek, it may run gravy. I'm not entirely
Look
sure.
Look at that flubber fly.
Honestly, he's being interviewed post game, his helmet's up, and you're like, man, that guy, how much? You got to go through a half a bar of soap
like
at least
Alejandro
to wash that
Kirk
face. Well, this is it, right? He's got that kind of the roly poly. Russian goalie.
Well, this was only the second time in these playoffs that Tampa has not had the expected goals advantage when Hedman was on the ice, and they had only a 36% Corsi when he was on the ice. Like, even he was getting worked in this one. And so you do wonder about the carryover between series, the fact that Dallas had some time to rest, or, you know, did they just have their fucking lunch fed to them? It's hard to say. Go ahead.
I think it's absolutely the fact that there's no crowd, and Tampa is rolling right in from one series 2 days later into the next.
Right.
And Dallas has had the opportunity. Now you hear people say it's not great. to have too much downtime in the bubble at this point.
Well, apparently there was a nice trip to the driving range and it was something else, like an arcade or something they went to.
And they've been out to Commonwealth. And, they've been bowling. They've been out, right? And so I think at this point, when you look at that little post-game celebration where Dallas hands out their player of the game. Have you seen any of those clips from the Dallas media?
Yep.
And so you get the chain with a little Dallas Stars logo on it.
Boo.
It's actually a big chain. It sounds like who was that? Who was that UFC fighter? Came out with the chain on, black guy.
Yeah, I can't remember, man.
Okay, you have to clip that part.
We'll do that.
But yeah, you know, and the whole concept of at this point where Kim Aranta, after they eliminated the Avalanche,
who no one had heard of a month ago, and is now suddenly playoff sniper extraordinaire.
For sure. I never heard of him before that hat trick game.
Exactly. No one had.
Well, and you show that clip where they get the game thing, and like any hockey player, right, the first thing he does is drop a couple F-bombs. I don't care what language you speak. Fuck is
that's
his
universal.
He's international, right? Everybody's got that. And then he's looking around. He's like, I don't know what to say. So we're not going home.
Yeah. Well, and then Khudobin did the same thing after their win over Vegas.
Vegas.
And I saw one person. I don't remember who it is, and I don't particularly care. But like, I don't want to be this person, but imagine being his kids and seeing dad celebrate. That he's like, just stop, right?
Yeah,
like,
you're already that person.
Try to understand what's happening here, right? Like,
yeah,
this is sort of the age we live in now. But that's been the rallying cry, not just with Dallas. A few teams have done it. You've seen the "we're not going home" thing after, you know, life in the bubble, right? This is how we're staying alive. This is what we're.
Yeah,
I think. Decent parents understand.
I'm picturing this 3-year-old little Kazaki kid.
Dad he's looking at that, come home,
and the little tears rolling down his.
Well, I think that's what we were trying to be sold on here, man.
Get a life, you loser.
Apparently, that means dad doesn't love you anymore.
Yeah, because guess what? You're going to be 7, and you're going to be so Jones that your dad's won a cup or. Or was the reason his team played in the final?
When dad suddenly gets $5 million a year for the next 3 years and the toys start getting sweet.
Playing for Toronto
Christmas.
Maple Leafs.
Let's not do that. But but yeah, like chill out a little, right? Like I kind of dig it as a rallying cry. And because I've seen it, it's not just Dallas. There's been other teams who've done the "we're not going home" thing. And, you know, it's a unique year, man. Like I think it's a cool thing to rally around.
It's like the people who leave clips under, you know, comments under porn videos and say, this makes baby Jesus cry.
I don't understand anyone who leaves comments on Pornhub. What is
and that's that? Yeah. That's the ultimate troll job.
Jesus Christ. You know her dad's proud. Right?
Yeah. Well, look at all these things, right? You're like, get a life, man. Like, honestly, what are you doing here?
Right.
So don't pay any attention.
As we circle all the way back then, does that one win, I guess it does to you. You said you thought Dallas might, you know, you would take Dallas in 6. Did that win mean much? Or, like, was that indicative of the series or is that indicative of the rest versus?
I think at this point, after game one, it's just indicative of the rest versus.
Yeah.
Versus sort of being worn out. I would like to see what happens if that 22-2 shot carry over into game two.
Yep.
But yeah, if Tampa doesn't have that same sort of rollover, like, okay, we've seen what you got now and we'll go with it from here. Yeah. If they get rolled again,
yeah,
then it's going to be short, right? Now, the flip side is Boston rolled in and beat Tampa in game one of that series, and it went 5.
Yep.
Tampa in 5. So,
well, interestingly, as we rip on the analytics thing, Tampa scores more of their goals than any other team from the high slot as opposed to down low right in front of them. Like, they screen the goalie less than anyone in the league, and Dallas's defense is the best in the league at taking away high slot offense. So you know, if you just kind of threw those two teams against each other, in my mind, you'd go, oof, it's not even close, Tampa, right? But when you actually start to break it down and look at how they score their goals versus how they defend, you go, I don't know. This could be way more interesting than I thought.
You should maybe reach out to Tyler Seguin because he says that analytics are overrated.
I've heard that, and he's not returning our calls yet, but we'll see
yet.
How that goes.
Yet. Yeah, come on.
People are lining up to get on this
you
show.
You keep racking it up, man.
Yeah,
I'm telling
exactly.
you, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. We'll just have to make sure we don't run them on this show. Because you know,
I'm still a Phil guy. Thank you, Kessel.
Fat, fucking, filthy Phil Kessel.
Yeah.
Right. Two more years in the desert. Shine
two more years
on.
Of us still carrying 1.2 of his salary in Toronto. That's all that means.
Winning cups and still getting paid by Toronto.
Yeah.
That's just another
but
one
coming
of those
home to burn Steve Simmons, I almost forgive it, right? Eating hot dogs out of the Stanley Cup. Love you, Phil.
Okay.
I can tolerate it.
Yeah. It's just a different venue. It's just a different vessel to get the hot dogs into his face.
Anything else to cover on this one, man?
No. No, I think we're good. I think game two is going to be super telling.
Yeah.
But I fully
What's
expect.
What's with the back-to-back? Why is there a back-to-back?
Honestly, they're like firing down.
Get the fuck out of the bubble. Let's get out of here.
Well, and really, I think like everything else, it goes down to the filthy lucre, right?
It's
NBC saying, this is when we want this to happen. We got The Bachelor's on or whatever.
I think both of those are true. I think NBC said we want Friday and Sportsnet went, well, we want Saturday. Well, then I guess we got a back-to-back.
Like, yeah. Well, and you look at this week with the U.S.
Dumb.
Open Golf, and you're like, yeah, we want to churn this out, but we don't want Sunday hockey because
right.
there's NFL, there's the game, you know, day four of the U.S. Open Golf, and you go,
but usually
so
that means
it's
a 2-day break instead of a one, like, no day break.
Well, no, this, I'm talking about the start date, right?
Yes.
And I think it all gets buggered up with the start date, right? Is NBC saying, all right, well, we got to go Saturday because we can't go Sunday, and then Monday Night Football. Anyways, you're like, this is what we got. Let's do it.
Hiding from everybody else, for sure. We have, coming up Wednesday morning, Sean McKenzie. He was a lot of fun to talk to. That one's already in the can, so make sure you check that one out. He's got some cool stories about riding around with Dad and having to be the guy who Dad passes his BlackBerry to. And by the way, tweet. Owen Nolan traded to the Leafs or whatever it might be, right? Like, Dad can't do it on the road. So
smart.
He's got some crazy stories, and so he's a lot of fun to talk to. That'll be Wednesday morning on TCA number 732, so we hope you'll check that one out. We're on Twitter and Instagram at TallCanAudio, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio. We'll see you all on the next one.
See you.
It is over.
Now that's a tasty beverage.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at TallCanAudio.com or by searching TallCanAudio on your favorite podcast app.